Good evening. Good evening. My name is Sharon Cohn, and I serve as a lawyer with an organization called International Justice Mission. We are a human rights organization serving among the poor around the world, and it is a privilege to be with you this evening. So there are 22,000 people here. A lot of people see 22,000 students and think, ah, customers. Surely you need what they are selling. Surely they can convince you that your life will not be complete without it. You are money. You probably are weary of people telling you that as a student you can change the world. Let me tell you what I have learned, though. When dictators think of 22,000 students, they think of what you might do. When power is threatened, it is students who are feared. When power is threatened, dictators don't shut down the commercial districts, they close the schools. Tan Shui, the leader of the military junta in Burma, fears you. He just arrested 5 student leaders from the 1988 democracy movement. And do you know why? Because he knows what you may only suspect. Students change the world. The student movement in South Africa that ultimately precipitated the downfall of apartheid changed the world. Students threaten what is because they have an anticipation of what might be and what should be. And from time to time, they have been relentless about pursuing it, and the world changes. In part, I think it is because the university makes everything seem possible. The world is open to us, for many of us, for the first time. For me, college was freedom. I was this mostly sarcastic Jewish girl from Jersey who covered all my fear with a quest for knowledge. It was, to be sure, a thin cover, but it had worked, and I clung to it desperately. When I got to university, it stopped working. Not only that, but I was confronted with the claims of a messiah that seemed to satisfy both my own inarticulated longings and the articulated prophecies of my own people's scriptures. But all of this was supposedly part of a Gentile world that was forbidden to me. Believe me when I tell you I ran as far and as fast as my heart and head would allow me. I enlisted professors in the struggle. I took on street preachers in the student amphitheater. I picked a fight with every inner varsity staff and leader I met. I was, in short, insufferable. A little over a year later, weary and hoarse, I became a believer. And I found the God of my people, not just the God of the Gentiles. And he speaks. So if you are wondering what on earth you are doing here with all of these believers at Urbana in St. Louis, let me assure you, you are not alone. And as I came to know God, I became interested in what interested him, or at least I wanted to. For example, his relentless concern for the poor, his peculiar preoccupation with the last, the least, the lost, and the littlest, his remembrance of the people that the world forgot. Among all of God's characters revealed in Scripture, God reserves his strongest commentary for the offense of injustice. Proverbs 14 says, "He who oppresses the poor shows contempt for their maker." It is to show contempt for the very character of God. As one Jewish scholar put it, "The exploitation of the poor is to us a misdemeanor, but to God it is a disaster." Instead of telling you about the estimated 27 million slaves in the world today, that is 27 million people today owned by other people, I just want to talk to you about one girl, Elizabeth. Elizabeth is a girl from an ethnic minority community living in a small village in Southeast Asia. She had just completed her 10th grade classes and was waiting for her exam results when a woman from a nearby village told her she could get a good job just across the border in a nearby city. Elizabeth was the oldest of 7 children from a devout Christian home, and she wanted to go to Bible college. She was afraid to travel, but she wanted to help with the family finances, and she wanted to go to school, so she agreed, and she went. The woman sold her to a trafficker, and the trafficker sold her to a brothel. And the brothel keeper told Elizabeth she owed him all the money for these sales and that she would have to submit to repeated sexual assaults in order to repay the debt and win her freedom. Elizabeth resisted for 3 months until she was literally starving and could hold out no longer. Her first customer was a Westerner, and he paid $500 to rape her because she was a virgin. Elizabeth said she wanted to die, and thoughts of suicide came to her mind. She tried to get the other girls in the brothel to pray with her, but they laughed at her, and they taunted her, and they said, "God cannot hear you in here." But she said, "I believed." She prayed, and she asked that God would rescue her before her first year anniversary in the brothel. As Elizabeth cries out for a rescue, what do we imagine happens? I think God mobilizes his people. I think God asks his people to stand up, speak up, show up on behalf of the oppressed. Isaiah 1:17 is a directive. Seek justice. Rescue the oppressed. Defend the fatherless. Provide for the widow. Or in 2 Corinthians, where Paul says, we are Christ's ambassadors to the world, as if God was making his appeal through us. We are the instruments of his grace to demonstrate the good news of his love through justice. The problem is, it's not so simple, is it? What obscures our ability to be interested in the things that interest God? I think it is the smallness of us and the massiveness of the need. Our smallness. We have two kinds. The first is the smallness of our concerns. My concerns are what impacts me, my day, my circumstances, my needs. The second is the smallness of my expectations. In frantic navel-gazing, I come up with lots of good reasons why I can't do whatever it is I fear God is asking of me. Now, I'm a lawyer, right? So my lists are alphabetized or in diminishing order of significance. And they are mercilessly footnoted with all of my past that disqualify me for why I can't in the present. One of the most powerful prophets of justice knew this well. Amos said, "I was not a prophet, nor a prophet's son. I was a shepherd, and I also took care of the sycamore fig trees." In other words, I wasn't all that much, but then the Lord took me. And then there is this other side. If our smallness stands us on our heels, the massiveness of the need can knock us backward altogether. We are stifled by the enormity of the need in our world today. Because the problem is it isn't just Elizabeth. It is millions of other men, women, and children. Tonight, I would just like to bring you the good news that God is not knocked backwards by the massiveness of the need. It does not blur the contours of each person he so passionately loves and he so doggedly pursues. As for Elizabeth, in April 2003, an IJM undercover investigator was in Elizabeth's brothel looking for minors and other trafficked women. Elizabeth confided in him her desire to escape, and based on her information, we worked with local law enforcement, and they conducted a raid and rescued a number of other children and trafficked women in that brothel. On the day of the raid, an unusual sight was found on the wall in one of the rooms of the brothel. On the wall of the brothel, where Elizabeth was subjected to daily sexual assault, she had written Psalm 27:1-3. "The Lord is my light and my salvation. Whom shall I fear? The Lord is the stronghold of my life. Of whom shall I be afraid? When evil men advance against me to devour my flesh, when my enemies and my foes attack me, they will stumble and fall. Though an army besiege against me, my heart will not fear. Though war break out against me, even then I will be confident." Elizabeth spent some time in an aftercare center before returning to her family. She's just completed her university degree in geography and wants to work as a translator for an evangelist in her country. Recovery from such trauma is not easy for Elizabeth, but when I have fretted over her, she has assured me, "God loves me so much, Sharon. He is so good." It is just true, massive injustice in the world, and it is contrary to the purposes for which God imagined us. But imagine what God might want you to do about it. One person rescued from police brutality told me that he was studying law because then injustice would have a new enemy. 22,000 people, Imagine how many more enemies injustice could have this evening. Here is the end of the story. The great news is that the world does not revolve around you, but you matter immensely, not just to God, though that should be enough to raise the lowest head, but to Elizabeth and to the millions of others who cry out for justice. Okay, so you don't know exactly what to do. There is so much, 27 million slaves. You are so small. Also, you might be failing calculus, but so what? So what? Really? We are called to greater courage. Dear ones, we are called to be just a little bit braver tomorrow than we find ourselves today. I was not a prophet nor a prophet's daughter, but then God. And let me tell you, in my experience, courage just does show up right when it's supposed to. I found my courage to share with you just about 5 minutes ago. It would have been super, so super, for it to have come a little bit before that. But I tell you, it does come. Elizabeth makes me brave. I have no idea how Elizabeth endured in that brothel, or how the many others I know endured torture, slavery, abuse, and degradation. But I think they waited to see God's tangible love. And showing God's love to them meant stepping into uncertain circumstances and fighting to set them free. I think God demands and provides us courage, not just to give us character, but to give others life. I asked Elizabeth to read Psalm 27 to me once, and she said no. She said Psalm 27 is what she read when she was in the brothel, but she wanted to share with me Psalm 34. I sought the Lord, and he answered me, and he delivered me from all my fears. Dear ones, we are called to draw near. We are urged farther in. We are asked to do it anyway when it is difficult and painful. We are all called to seriously consider God's love and concern for the oppressed. We are also all called to be relentless in pursuing God's justice in whatever ways he shows us. Maybe that's a career in law and law enforcement. Maybe that's being an advocate on your campus. Maybe that's fearlessly interceding for those who even today await a rescue and await justice. John 2:5 says, do whatever he tells you. This is the divine invitation. Like Elizabeth, you were not just rescued from, you were rescued for purpose, for promise, and for God's infinite glory. Thank you.